The world economy appears to have averted the worst-case outcome after Iran downplayed apparent Israeli airstrikes as children's toys. But heightened tensions in the Middle East continue to keep markets and investors on edge, prompting financial authorities to stay on alert for any emergencies. So to help us break down the lingering uncertainties and the impact of geopolitical risks on the Korean economy, we're now joined by Professor Shin Se-dun, economics professor at Sungmyung Women's University. Good morning, and thank you for joining us.
Good morning.
Happy to have you. There was a lot of fear about potential oil prices skyrocketing. Would it cost us more at the pumps? Things like that. Many had feared oil prices would rise to even triple digits after Israel's retaliation. But there was no major spike despite the attack on Iran. What's behind the relatively flat oil prices, Dr. Shin?
Well, I think the market is getting less sensitive to global kind of shocks like, the Iranian and the conflict between Iran and those Middle East area. You know, right after the Ukrainian war in the March of 2022, the peak price for oil was about $120. And about a year and a half later, right after the Hamas war in, October 23, the peak price was $94. And the peak price for this event, the Iranian and Israeli conflict, the peak price was $86. So you could see the peak price has been, climbing down from 120 to 90, 80. So I think the people get accustomed to the kind of regional shock. That's one thing. And another thing is, the supply chain concerning the oil supply has not been damaged by this kind of regional conflict. Mm-hmm. And on top of it, global demand for oil has been declining over the last, I think, two years. So I think it is overstate, to talk about oil price, above $100. I think this is pretty much misplaced.
One of the toughest things as any journalist or any media personality, we have a tough time trying to manage expectations and not to monger fear. But whenever there is an uncertainty, especially a conflict that's completely out of our hands, mm-hmm. I think it's natural to jump to the worst case scenario. But as you've said, maybe we've already acclimated to the uncertainties of the Middle East, uncertainties of these conflicts. Okay, so we'll wait and see.
Yeah. I think, the oil price is going to come down to about $70 by the end of this year and possibly around the $60. So to me, it's not a worry at all about the oil price.
So we'll take your expert opinion and hold you accountable if towards the end of the year it doesn't hit $70
a
barrel.
Yeah, okay.
But what about the factor that it takes 2-3 weeks for global oil prices to affect local prices at the pumps? Could it maybe go a little bit higher before it comes down?
Well, the government has the policy tool to control, market price in Korea by lowering the tax upon the oil consumption. So I think that the government has delayed about 2 months to delay the increasing the oil tax. And if the price goes up in the market, I think the government will extend further to, the end of the year. So I don't think, pretty much instability in the local price for the oil.
Professor Shin, I'm going to hold you accountable. $70,
yeah.
You said it first.
Not
only. The rising volatility in the foreign exchange markets also seems to be a problem. Korean currency logged the sharpest fall of over 7% last Friday amid the Middle East risks, which is the biggest slide since the 2008 global financial crisis. So how do you assess the current foreign exchange market volatility? And does it call it for government intervention at certain point?
Okay, you have to understand, the Korean currency depreciated about 7% during this year. But you have to remember that the Japanese yen depreciated about 9%. So Japanese yen is, more unstable than Korean. That's one thing. And another thing is, Korean market has been under tremendous kind of a pressure because Korean interest rate is about 2 percentage points lower than America, which means that there's constant pressure for Korean money to offload to the United States. That, I think, is the fundamental kind of a power. And, you know, the only kind of a counterforce to that depreciation of the Korean currency was Korean market, I mean, Korean trade surplus has been pretty strong during this year. Mm. And the current account is also, you know, about $40 billion for the few months. So I think Korean authority has to face a tremendous kind of a pressure coming from interest rate gap, about 2 percentage points. So that's a fundamental kind of, task for the authority. But you have to remember that, you know, Korean authority has nothing in their power because dollar has been pretty strong, you know, throughout last couple of years. So it's very difficult for Korean authority to counter, you know, the strong dollar coming in the market.
Okay. The Bank of Korea chief did say that the won volatility is a little excessive and it will intervene if needed. They said they would deploy stabilizing measures. When, if, would that be necessary, do you think, Professor?
If, you know, the rate goes up beyond 1400, okay, then I think the government has to intervene to stabilize. And I think, you know, it was stabilized under 1400.
Okay.
And there's no reason to believe that, you know, the rate would go up 1450 as, you know, some market participants are expecting. So to me, I think government has the power, you know, to stabilize. But they don't probably have the power to avert, you know, Korean currency depreciation. But I think government has enough power, enough measures, you know, to stabilize at around below 1400, I think. So the rate will stabilize until, you know, the end of this year below 1400.
All right. I also want to ask you a question about the interest rate. Our hopes of cutting interest rates, is it just completely slashed? So BOK kept its benchmark interest rate unchanged at 3.5% last Friday. How will the heightened Middle East risk impact the Korean Central Bank's future interest rate decisions? And would we be able to see rate cuts later in the year?
I think there's actually, there's 0% of, you know, the Bank of Korea to lower the rate. That's one thing. And if the Middle, you know, East kind of a crisis, if the Middle East problem develops into kind of a catastrophic kind of situation, then the price of oil will surge above $100. And that's going to cause a tremendous inflation pressure. In that case, you know, the Bank of Korea has to raise it, not to lower it. So to me, you know, there's a 0% of the lower rate throughout this year, and possibly the rate will go up if, you know, Middle East crisis erupts. But I think there's a little chance, you know, for the Middle East crisis will develop into kind of a regional war like Ukrainian war. So to me, I think the rate will stabilize until the end of this year, and the exchange rate will stabilize below 1400, and the oil price will stay around, you know, $80 or possibly $75. So to me, I don't worry too much about, you know, the market.
Okay, so if you don't worry, perhaps we'd be less worried too. But you take inventory of the economy that we face in South Korea, and it's troubling. High inflation, high interest rates on top of rising geopolitical risks that are, again, out of our control in many cases. So it's a ripple effect. So we wait for these shoes to drop. Mounting household as well as government debt. At this point in time, what fiscal policy do you think is needed, and what should the government prioritize?
Well, you know, the symbol of this, you know, Yoon Suk Yeol administration is fiscal austerity, fiscal kind of, you know, soundness. Mm-hmm. So the first principle is the government has to maintain fiscal austerity to prevent, you know, further worsening in national debt. That's one thing. And second thing, economy is so bad these days, and there are a lot of people, you know, under the middle class having difficulties in their livelihood. So the government has to concentrate their resources to help, you know, to support those, you know, to the middle class and lower class in subsidies for food, subsidies for fuel, subsidies for energy bill. Mm-hmm. And you might ask, you know, what about the monies they talk about? And for to support those, you know, underprivileged class, the government has to restructure government expenditure to kind of support those needy people in the economy.
You're talking about rebudgeting. Every time there is a budget decision to be made, political aisles don't see eye to eye, Dr. Shin. But nonetheless.
But the election is over, right? The election is over. So there's no pressure for, you know, the ruling party. So I think government has plenty of dedication to, you know, support those needy people. That's exactly the spirit of the, you know, the opposition party.
So maybe they can see eye to eye for once on this common ground. All right. Professor Shin, it's been such a pleasure having you on the program for weeks on end. It was so insightful. Before we say goodbye, because I have a little bit of time left, we ask our listeners a question every day. Today is apparently UNESCO-designated World Book Day. Are you a big reader, and do you have any favorites you want to recommend to our listeners?
Oh, yeah. I am reading almost 3 years, you know, the Chinese history books. We call it Jiachi Tonggam. It is about the more than 1,500 years of Chinese history, and that's going to give you a lot of insight, you know, what's going on in these days. So I've been reading that for almost, you know, 4 years, 5 years. And the one thing is that's in Chinese characters. It's going to be very difficult to read it. But somebody interested in reading that, I think you can call me and I will talk about the, you know, Jiachi Tonggam, or in Chinese, Jiji Tongjian, which is a very good book. And everybody, especially the politicians, have to read it, you know, to get insight about the politics.
Professor Shin, I should have asked the question so much more carefully. That sounds like my Mount Everest. So how about I ask for your summary? Thank you very much. It's been a great pleasure.
You're welcome.
If you're listening to our program using the podcast service, just a reminder that we do go live Monday through Friday, 7 a.m. Korea Standard Time. So tune in and help us make the show more informative by giving us your input. See you bright and early on Good Morning Seoul.